Let's do our UFL week three or after week three power rankings. Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to do in the MVP and the power rankings there. And I also want to get to some notes just before we do that, right? Like the UFL's onside kick alternative is working. Like this is one of those things I thought was going to be controversial because I didn't think that we would see many coaches take advantage of this option, but the way that the rule is intended, they kind of have to because the game has made itself to be much more exciting. So because we don't have point after attempts in the UFL, we have teams that are going for 1-point conversions, 2-point conversions, 3-point conversions from the 2, the 5, and the 10, except we haven't had any teams go for the 3-point conversion from the 10, which I think is found money, but maybe not, depending on how your kickers are doing. We'll get to that in a second. However, the onside kick alternative is only for teams that are trailing in the fourth quarter, for which you can choose to have a 4th-and-12 play from your own 28-yard line, pick up the first down and keep it moving. The clock will begin to run, right? This is very cool because onside kicks just don't work. Like, I think the hit rate is 5% on onside kicks, and I dare say it shouldn't be that high. Like, I've never seen an onside kick that was one in which I thought the kicking team was going to recover. I always thought, you know, it's got to be something with the receiving team screwing up or somebody on the hands team that shouldn't be there. But because we have this alternative and we have tight games because there are scores that are like 16-8 or 16-9 because you can go for 2 as opposed to 1, you're getting into these situations where you're in a 1-score ball game trailing 9, right? Because you'll go get 6 and 3 if it takes that. So you're much more likely to do that. We've also seen that work with double-digit deficits over the last 2 weeks, which is no small thing. I mean, the San Antonio Brahmas scored 12 points in the final minute of regulation in week 2 to win their second game of the season. And we've also seen defenses really have to bow up and settle in like we did when we were watching the Brahmas play the St. Louis Battlehawks week 3, right? So I thought it was interesting that instead of going for the 4th-and-12 with just over a minute left to play in the ball, and kicking off to the Battlehawks, Wade Phillips decided that he wanted to kick off rather than do the 4th-and-12 because he thought he had all 3 timeouts. He did, but they used those 3 timeouts crappily. And I always wonder what an offensive coach or defensive coach would do, and Wade Phillips being a defensive coach expects his defense to hold up and get him the ball back. And I'm an offensive coach, so I would like to get them the ball and see what Chase Garbers could do in that instance. But it has been thrilling for us to watch, and I think that is the thing to really take from this, because we've seen the NFL adopt the new kickoff rule that the XFL had last year because it's working, right? You're bringing back an entertaining part of the game and doing it safely, because one of the things that makes that work is you can't have guys just flying down the field just as soon as the ball is kicked, going full speed to waylay somebody. They got to wait for that ball to be fielded and then they get to fly down. Same thing with punt returns, right? So you're bringing back a very entertaining aspect of the game, and that's what football is for. I mean, as much as we want to make football into a bigger deal, it's for you and I to watch. And particularly on television, when you talk about professional football, whether it's the UFL or the NFL. The other thing that I thought was interesting to point out about what we can glean from basically a third of UFL season being gone is kickers are killing it. Like, no joke, dog. We might be in a golden age of kickers, especially in this spring football league, because we're able to find guys that would have otherwise never kicked a football. My favorite example of this is Brandon Aubrey, who had never kicked a football in any competitive competition until he signed with the Birmingham Stallions in 2022. 2 years of doing that, 2 championships, makes training camp with the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, right? And then sets an NFL record for most consecutive field goal makes with 19, is an all-pro as a rookie, had never kicked a football. Then I take a look at what are some other guys that might get some opportunities they wouldn't otherwise. Like Donald Delahaye was a big signing for the UFL, huge personality on the YouTubes, right? Famously was kicking footballs on YouTube at Central Florida. And we didn't have name, image, and likeness at that time. So he was asked to either shutter the channel from making any money or quit playing football. So it's been a real grind for him to get back. He got back, tried to go down, make a tackle. It was a good hit. Tackle wrong, broke his neck. Not playing with San Antonio Brahmas anymore. But that's a guy that got a shot. But the dude to really take a look at right now is Jake Bates, who is the kicker for the Michigan Panthers. What I find most interesting about Jake Bates is that he was all SEC as a kickoff specialist. And that's also the reason that Mike Nolan signed him to the Michigan Panthers, knowing what the kickoff rule is going to be. You want a guy that can boom it. And how much better can you get than all SEC as a kickoff specialist at Arkansas? However, Jake Bates had not kicked field goals since high school, right? So they went into this first week of a play without knowing whether or not Jake Bates could kick against a rush. They'd seen him make 65 without a rush. They get him down in there with the time running out in the first half, 64-yard field goal, which is a wild place to get started. And he kicks it, but there's a timeout, goes through, comes back, does the same thing, and it looks good from 70. Comes back and kicks another one from 62. He's made from 55. He's 4 of 4 this season without ever having kicked a field goal in a professional environment or even a college environment. That is a guy that's getting a shot because the UFL exists, right? And I dare say, not only is he going to get invited to a training camp in July, he's going to make a team, because having a guy that can boom it like that and who is as automatic as he has been from that distance is a weapon. Like, that's a dude you go draft at this particular juncture in the NFL, because good kickers are just that much difficult to come by. I'm also looking around it. He ain't the only one making kicks. Like, we're talking about Jake Bates because he kicked from 64 when the NFL record set by Justin Tucker in the same building, by the way, Ford Field just last year, 66. But UFL kickers, 7 of them have kicked field goals, are 39 of 43, which is a wild stat, right? And they have made 18 of 18 through the first, like, 11 games, or excuse me, through week 11, right? And then we have, what, Matt McCrane hit from 50 twice, 1 of 58. He's kicking for the Defenders. We got Matt Coughlin, who's made from 57, kicking for the Showboats. We've got Roughnecks kicker J.J. Molson, who's made from 55. We got Andre Sismet, which is kind of a cheat code because he was an All-American and Lou Groza Award winner at Syracuse, but he's also made from 54. And then we got Taylor Russolini, who was made from 52 for the Renegades. Still waiting on, you know, the Brahmas to get their guy, but again, that was Donald Delahaye, and he's been out for the season. All to say, look, this is where I think the UFL is going to make a tremendous dent when it comes to what players make what NFL rosters, which is what everybody's chasing when they play in these leagues. But it's sad to say, we got quarterbacks in the NFL. We got running backs in the NFL. We got linebackers in the NFL. We got dudes, right? It's really difficult to find a great kicker. And now that Dallas has had success with Brandon Aubrey and the kind of numbers that these guys are putting up, I would not be shocked to find out that all of these guys get invited to a camp and most of them end up making a team because they have shown themselves to be able to do this in a competitive environment on television. It's no small thing. It's no small thing. All right, let's do the after week 3 power rankings, all right? Let's go from 8 to 1. Somebody got to be 8. Somebody got to be 1. So number 8, 0-3, Houston Roughnecks fall to 0-3. This is a team that has had a punt blocked in every game they played this year. CJ Johnson got to be pulling his hair out going, how can this keep happening? How can we keep getting blocked and we can't block nobody? This is why you got one of the better defenders in the league in Reuben Foster, right? Who's been doing a lot of work there, but Reed Sinnott didn't have a step back. Just wasn't great in their last outing. I think that they can get a W, but can they be good enough to compete in that USFL conference? That remains to be seen. Like, I'm just not as high on them as I thought I was going to be, given what their defensive line was when they put it together through the dispersal draft and what was left of the USFL, right? But we'll see. Like, I think not having a guy like they did last year in Mark Thompson is also hurting them. Like, I love T.J. Pledger because T.J. Pledger was an Army All-American, went to Oklahoma before transferring to Utah, but he's just not the same sort of tailback as what Mark Thompson was for them when he won USFL Offensive Player of the Year. There's a distinction, by the way, for those of y'all that are new. We had an MVP in the USFL and an Offensive Player of the Year in the USFL, and they weren't the same person. That's how good Mark Thompson was, as we talk about what Alex Magoo was doing and made the team as a Green Bay Packer. Also, because the UFL is right there with the NFL, Alex Magoo makes the Green Bay Packers. Danny Etlin gets cut, and now he is backing up E.J. Perry with the Michigan Panthers, who we'll talk about here in just a minute. Number 7 on the list, I got the Memphis Showboats, who got shellacked, who got beat down, who got drubbed by the Birmingham Stallions. My goodness. The way that I slot this is, Deion Kane had 144 receiving yards. Case Cook has had 139 passing yards. Like, it was bad. Like, it's bad. Case Cook has also got the hook. So much so that on the sideline, John DeFilippo said to him, look, at some point, I got to take care of you too. I got to protect you. Which is him saying that the quarterback couldn't protect himself and the offensive line couldn't protect him. So you get Troy Williams out there who wasn't that much worse than Case Cook is. I don't know what that means about the offensive line or even the quarterback play, but I can tell you John DeFilippo was not happy without his offense played or his defense for that matter. Like, they allowed 8 sacks in that game, which is a gaudy number. Again, they have the tools to be good. It's just they got to figure out how to protect the quarterback. Protect the quarterback, you're in business there, because that wide receiver group and tight ends are just good. Like, Jay Adams is a dude. Sage Surratt is a dude. Case Cook is a dude. You just got to give him time to throw. Number 6 on the list, the Arlington Renegades, who are 0-3, but have shown themselves to be offensively one of the best in this league. Like, Luis Perez threw for 290 yards. Tyler Vaughn's caught 9 balls for 109 yards and a TD. Like, they were putting up yards. They had 419 total yards in that game. But the defense has just been bad, guys. Like, they lost this game 29-28 to the DC Defenders. But it's also yet another game in which they gave up 20 or more. Like, J.A.'s got to figure out what's going on with his defense. And I thought it was going to be pretty damn good because Jalen Redmond at Oklahoma, remember him? Donald Payne, linebacker out of Stetson. But here's the thing about Donald Payne. 2022, USFL plays 10 games. Donald Payne had over 100 tackles. He had 100 tackles in 10 games. He is a tackling machine, and yet it can't get done over there with the Renegades to stop people from scoring. And I'm sure Bob Stoops, who is a defensive-minded coach, is just absolutely beside himself with this, but they still got a shot. I mean, this is the team that went 4-7 last year and won the XFL championship, right? So we'll see. But Luis Perez has been one of the better players in this league. Number 5, I got the DC Defenders, who got the win against the Renegades, but also moved to 2-1, right? Got off to a slow start with that loss to San Antonio Brahmas, but since then, we've seen Reggie Barlow's team be what Reggie Barlow's team could be, particularly with Jordan Ta'amu at quarterback and Greg Williams calling the defense. I think being able to come back from 10 points behind with 2 minutes left to play, yeah, all right, that means you know how to win. Now, if they can ever get their run game to catch up with their passing game, they might also be that team that represents in the championship game St. Louis, you know, later this year. However, they got to get past teams like San Antonio Brahmas. And the Brahmas are number 4 for me. They weren't able to do this, but it seems a little bit more fluky when you think about Brad Wing throwing to a center to score a touchdown. Like, that's just not going to happen every single week. That said, Chase Garbers has been playing really great football. Like, he still has the best TD to INT ratio of any quarterback in the league at 6-1. Takes tremendous care of the football. They just aren't always able to run it. And I think they're trying to draw things up for Cody Latimer, so much so that when you listen to the broadcast, you can hear them calling Denver for the option route for him, right? Denver is where he won a Super Bowl, right? Cody Latimer. And then you got guys like Jontre Kirkland, who is a do-everything type of wide receiver, played some quarterback at LSU and didn't have nobody play quarterback at LSU. Really fun dude to watch play ball. They moved to 2-1, but I still think that's a really good football team. Number 3, the St. Louis Battlehawks for me. I think that the Battlehawks have the best home field advantage in the sport. I mean, you get 40,000 people to show up for a spring football game. I would really love to know what the promotion is, right? Because those folks just decided that they're going to make this team their team. Now, St. Louis is also working from a tremendous advantage. Like, one of the things I find interesting about this is St. Louis had a professional football team for the better part of 100 years, right? 1934, I believe they got their first professional football team, and they had one, right? All the way up until St. Louis decided up and move to LA, and that appetite is still very much there, especially as you're having to watch Kansas City be Kansas City, and you feel some kind of way about that if you are a Battlehawks fan. And Anthony Becht has been really leaning into that. And they got a first-team All-American at quarterback and former national champion, even if he was backup on the national championship team, and A.J. McCarron, right? A dude that can hand the ball around to some guys that can make some plays. Hakeem Butler, matchup nightmare. Wasn't a matchup nightmare at Iowa State. 6'6", 250, you know? And then if you can run the ball with guys like Mateo Durant, you're gonna have a shot to win some games here. And they move to 2-1. I think defensively, they get Mike Rose back. Maybe they'll be pretty stout and make yet another run toward the XFL division, and maybe even be able to host the championship game at the Battle Dome, which feels like a foregone conclusion if they are in that thing. That thing's just gonna be raucous. Number 2, I got the Michigan Panthers, who have played the most complete football game, individual football game, that any team I've seen, not named the Birmingham Stallions. Like, EJ Perry started to resemble the guy that we were talking about coming out of Brown in the NFL draft when he was eligible for it. He also was able to get some time back there He got sacked 7 times by the Birmingham Stallions the week before. He was only hurried 3 times in their win last week. They win 34-20, which makes them the team that has scored the most points of any team in any individual game in the UFL so far this season. All of a sudden, we didn't have anybody break 30, and we had 3 teams break 30 in week 3. So the offenses are beginning to figure this thing out. He was also 16-19 for 208 with 60 yards rushing. I think that Mike Nolan's defense is as good as it's going to be, which still is stout, right? But if that offense can begin to run the football well with guys like Wes Hills in the backfield and then E.J. Perry doing the QB draw thing, they got a shot to make some noise in the USFL conference. That said, number one is still number one. I mean, it's Birmingham Stallions. I mean, I've been on the Birmingham Stallions since I started covering this league at its formation January 2022, and then at the draft in Birmingham at Protector Stadium February 2022. And what Skip Holtz has been able to do, given the environment around spring football and how transient the sport is, because you got guys that are coming up, going down, so forth, so on, it's remarkable. Between him, Zach Potter, their general manager, John Chavis, defensive coordinator, just outstanding what he has done with quarterbacks, right? You had Alex Magoo and Jamar Smith win 2 championships this year. Jamar Smith gets to be the third string guy who's helping Matt Corral and Adrian Martinez get up to speed. But then you give Adrian Martinez his first professional football start, and he responds with the first 300-yard passing performance in UFL history and put up 344 total passing yards, 13-38. Also, quietly leads the UFL in rushing yards too with 161, and he only started week 3, right? That Skip could go back and forth between those guys and still get these results is remarkable. Like, both Matt Corral and Adrian Martinez, what a play. He said they both deserve to play. And it'd be interesting to see whether or not he settles on Adrian Martinez or Matt Corral further in the season, because that's usually what Skip does. When he gets closer to the end of the season, when they got to start preparing to play for championships, there's usually one guy that you can count on being back there. But the real leap has been the defense. Like, John Chavis' defense the last couple of years has been bend, don't break, which is a great way to make it through spring football, quite honestly, because you're still figuring it out and you're so thin on your roster. But this year, their defensive line has been ridiculous. Like, they got 17 sacks through 3 games, 15 in the last 2 weeks. So much so that, like, Skip Holtz was getting after his offensive line coach in camp practice going, can we not block anybody? Like, what the hell is this? And he wasn't sure if the offensive line was really bad and defensive line is really good. And in the post game, he says, I think our defensive line has a chance to be pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, they do. You know, Carlo Davis, Taco Charlton, those guys have been coming along. Then you got Kaiava Tizino, who was the best linebacker nobody talked about last year with the Pittsburgh Maulers, joining Scooby Wright, JoJo Tillery in the backfield. CJ Marable is also a third-year player for them. Like, Birmingham is the dream if you are a spring football fan or interested in supporting a spring football team. I wouldn't be mad about it at all. I'm sure Skip Holtz wouldn't hold a grudge neither. All right. Let's go from our from our power rankings to our MVP rankings. And this, I gotta admit to you guys, I did not expect to do a whole lot of moving and shaking when I decided to do this segment. But that's just what this segment has become, because dudes are making cases for themselves so early and often in this game, or I should say in this season, that I just have to take into account what they mean for their teams and what their teams are doing. So we're gonna go number 5 to number 1 right quick. Number 5, I've got Darius Shepherd, who was the XFL Special Teams Player of the Year for the Battlehawks, also doing pretty outstanding work for them this year. He leads the league in all-purpose yards. He's also the only guy in the UFL to have over 300 yards kick return, 80 yards receiving or punt return, and 100 yards receiving or 80 yards punt return. So he's getting it all in. Also, if Darius Shepherd means something to you, it's because he played North Dakota State, won 3 national championships, right? People talking about Trey Lance probably should have been talking about Darius Shepherd. Number 4 on the list for me, DC Defenders quarterback Jordan Tamu, who was the XFL Offensive Player of the Year last year. It doesn't feel like they win football games if Jordan Tamu is not their quarterback at DC, full stop. Like, he has been so responsible for what Fred Kice can do with that offense, especially since they can't run the ball. Like, they had Abram Smith lead all of spring football last year, frankly, in rushing, and he's not there. And yet and still, they're still finding ways to win because Jordan Tamu is back there throwing passes. Number 3 on the list, I got Michigan quarterback E.J. Perry, who put together what I thought was the best performance, again, that he's had since he joined the Michigan Panthers last year. 16 of 19 for 208, 60 yards rushing, and then three total TDs in that. Also, not afraid of the check down, right? Like, I enjoy how much Joel Klatt loves to talk about quarterbacks, but nothing makes him angrier than forcing a throw, and I always get a kick out of it. So when I saw E.J. Perry check the ball down 5 yards to Marcus Sims, and then Marcus Sims turn around, break six tackles on the way for a 66-yard touchdown, I'm going, that's Joel's guy right there. Like, let your playmakers make plays for you. That's what Marcus Sims was able to do. Super fast, and I was really excited to see him get a shot in this league, but also that it's coming together for E.J. in a way that it finally feels like he's not pressing. He's able to play. But again, offensive line gave him a little bit of time to work through his progressions this week, and that seems to do wonders for everybody. Number two on the list, I got Arlington Renegades quarterback Luis Perez. Perez is the only quarterback to throw for 700 yards or more through three games this season, and nobody else is within 100 yards of him. I think he's got 737, and I think Tamu's at 627. So he's been great. I mean, they call him King of Spring because he played in all these leagues, but he's also been good in all these leagues, right? When he was with the New Jersey Generals, coached by Mike Riley in 2022, they made it to the divisional round in the playoffs. So he won championship after a trade in the XFL. He has played the last 2 years on playoff teams. That's it, right? If he can turn this team around from their 0-3 start, look out, man, because that offense is absolutely getting after it, right? They got dudes at tailback. They got dudes at wide receiver. They got dudes at tight end. I mean, I'm thinking about Devion in the backfield. I'm thinking about Sal Canella at tight end. I'm thinking about Tyler Vaughn out on the numbers, right? The offensive line I'm particularly attached to because there's three Oklahoma guys out there, right? I think they really got a shot with Luis Perez back there. And throwing for 290 in a loss that wasn't your fault, yeah, that's going to get you high on this rankings list. And then number one, I got Adrian Martinez, which I understand if you feel some kind of way about this because this is his first start. And you might make the argument that, well, RJ, if he wasn't good enough to start the first two games, why is he number one on your rankings list? Because that's how Skip Holtz has drawn it up. I think if you give Adrian Martinez the same opportunities you give Matt Corral, you're probably going to get these results because the results are 344 passing yards and like 60 yards on the ground, leading the entire league in rushing, even though you only started one game and having the first 300-yard pass performance in the history of the UFL. 4.5 speed. Like, Adrian sees it. He sees it with Skip. This offense feels very much his skill set, the one that we got to see when he was outstanding at Nebraska. And even through the first few weeks at Kansas State before he had to go out with that injury, I think this is a great spot for him. And I really think that if you're going to make a decision in your Skip Holtz, this is the guy. Like, this right now, I just don't see Matt Corral taking this back from Adrian Martinez unless Skip Holtz gives him an opportunity. All right. So those are my MVP rankings. Let me know what you think on the Twitters, on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. You know where to find me. All right. It's going to do it for this episode of our UFL show. Number one college football show and the UFL show. Leads the screening are Jack Coakley and Torin Westfall. They make us better in the film room. Additional support from Kiara Santana and Jim Cunningham put the special in our special teams. Producer Javion Duncan makes sure the recruits and the rivals see the cake we bake. Senior producer Catherine Cordaggi sees the entire field from the booth. Lead producer Tyler Wojak calls the plays from the sideline to play snaps on my clap. We'll be back live on Tuesday to talk all things college football. We'll see you then. Deuces.